Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
This is a privilege, not a vacation. There's a tradition on this adventure, and you need to bone up on whose shoulders you're standing on.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 121 for the week of June 27th, 2016. I am personal microphone David T. Cole, and I'm here with backstage skateboard Sarah D. Bunting.
Got the mic.
Great moment in running Joe Reed.
Super bad, huh?
Old school groupie Tara Ariano.
Look how big my hoop earrings are.
And topless 22-year-old Jeff Drake.
Awesomely.
Welcome back to the Extra Hot Great Podcast. Joining us this week is returning champion Jeff Drake. Hello, Jeff.
Yay!
Hello. Oh my god. Oh my god. That startled me. It's very good to be here. It's good to be anywhere where I get to be awake.
All right. I'm not sure how long that will continue given our topic, but because we are talking about Showtime's new drama Roadies, or Dramedy, I guess, written and produced and directed and created by Cameron Crowe, Jeff was good enough to write the new show fact sheet, which we will link in the show notes, but we wanted to have you on to talk about it. So Dave and I finally watched it last night when it actually aired. And I want to touch on something that you brought up in your post, Jeff, which is the old schoolness of the stalker groupie that they have to, everyone is supposed to be on guard against, yet somehow slips through the cracks. As I was watching it, and you said, and I want to quote you accurately, of her outfit, it's clear that she's a stalker, because as soon as you get an eyeful of her, she's in like a long leather coat and has giant hoop earrings and like a huge stupid hat and stuff. And she looks like she came right out of Crazy Groupie Outfitters Outlet, which she does. whether this would have been a better show if it had been set in the era that Cameron Crowe is obviously more familiar with than now. What do you think about that? Or is there no saving this show?
That's... Hold on. Okay. Am I here now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. That was on my end.
Okay.
I leaned on the mute button just like a radio professional.
All right.
So forgiveness, Jesus.
So to answer your question, like I hadn't really thought about like changing like where this might, you know, the era this might be set in, and until like after I posted, I was sort of thinking about like how similar, like the groupie in this sort of like resembles just like the groupies in Almost Famous, which
yes.
is, I mean, not even like, but to like have set this like more in like the 70s or the 80s, I think would make this so much better, because it's because then you could have the whole gigantic nature of arena rock and all of that. You know, you don't get to have like, oops, this 22-year-old girl posted this thing on Instagram and it's getting all these likes. It's like stuff like that anyway is always like reminds me of like times when like a news anchor is like, let's blog. you know, it's just like, it's like you're obviously like just trying to like anchor it somehow in like the modern era or something. But it's, I don't know, like the show could end up being good, because like I said in the column, like, I mean, I think the two of the three leads are really interesting to watch. Like Imogene Poots, I don't care about her character, and it's just so like a weird old white guy writing about like this pixie dream girl, mm-hmm. like who's like she wants to be. She doesn't want to be a roadie anymore. She wants to go to film school, and it's like, oh, the American Beauty of it all is just too much for me. So I don't know. Like, can it be saved? It's like it's not as terrible as Vinyl. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing. Nothing is that terrible. But just sort of
same self seriousness I felt in this like. Sorkin-y speechifying that kept going on about just like the abstractions of what makes this business great and what's wonderful
right.
about rock and roll. And
yeah,
it might seem a little more natural and less, it might seem a little more organic if it were set in like the 60s or 70s, or these are roadies yeah. for like festivals, but it still wouldn't be interesting to watch. To me, like I got
now, I think
20 seconds into the second episode and was like, I don't actually have to be here. Bye. It's just more speeches.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think
film school. See ya.
Yeah,
Joe, you.
I think you bring up. Oh yeah, go ahead, Joe.
I was just gonna say, Joe, you defended this on Twitter last night, half-assedly.
I mean, I was gonna say I defended it by being like, it was okay.
It was okay, but I know of you that you are maybe the world's number one Almost Famous fan. So I'm curious to know
Almost Famous.
What your reaction was to this beyond it was okay.
Yeah, I feel like the thing with Cameron Crowe is that he's such a romantic about things, and that's where I feel like. That's where he and somebody like Aaron Sorkin do converge, is for all of Aaron Sorkin's faults, he is a massive romantic about like life and like the way that, you know, that real life should be like the movies he watched when he was growing up. And with Cameron Crowe, by applying that to something like Almost Famous that takes place in the past, you can at least graft on that whole thing of just like, oh, well, this is a movie that's clearly being made through rose-colored glasses, and that can be part of the appeal of it, and also something of a self-critique, even if it's not necessarily intentional on Cameron Crowe's part, where he fares better in a movie like Jerry Maguire, which I don't even like all that much, but like he fares better talking about sports because he doesn't pull all the romanticism out of it, but he gets to sport in a way that like he's very clear-eyed about the way that like Cuba Gooding Jr. and Regina King are a business together. Like they're a marriage and a business, and something he just seems to lose that ability when talking about rock and roll. And so in Almost Famous, like I said, if it's in the past, there's that sort of like haze of memory. If it's in the present, it's just sort of like, it's as you guys have been saying, like speechifying, and that whole sort of like endless scene with Rafe Spall, poor Rafe Spall gets so much like, and I like him as an actor, and I think I want to like that character, and there seems to be like fits and starts of trying to make that character into a person and not just sort of like the suit. And I like the way that they make him kind of a weirdo, but it's kind of an unwinnable game.
If it were edited better.
Yeah.
Like he's doing his best, but I really felt like that first episode was like at, I don't know, 38 minutes, maybe this is good and has something to say. But a lot of it felt a little first drafty and like maybe, I don't know, these were lines that Cameron Crowe was like, right? One of those old lines at the zoo, right? And it's Cameron Crowe. So nobody was like, actually, that's kind of first drafty and you should cut it. It's trying too hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Here's my other thing. If this were way more processy, I would love it.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to be processy. I don't need a bunch of, like, lectures about how great rock and roll is. Like,
yeah, seriously.
They still put radios in cars. We got it.
But when you open with the older tour manager or production, whatever the fuck Luke Wilson's guy was, when we open with him having sex with the much younger topless girl who's going crazy, like that's the first scenes like, oh, okay, this isn't for me. Like this is for some fantasy that Cameron Crowe has and other guys like him who want to go back to these days where it's like sad. And also I do agree that Carlo Gugino and Luke Wilson have great chemistry, but they did their best with dialogue. Like Luke Wilson is like, there was a time when I would have gotten through this with a drink, and she goes, don't break your 2 years of sobriety for this. Like, oh, it's so casual how you worked that fact in.
Yeah,
come on. Guys.
Yeah.
They have good chemistry together, but I don't know if I buy him as a roadie at all. Like, I just a temperament for that. Like, yeah. I kind of buy her, but I don't buy him. I'd like to see the two of them together in maybe something else, but, like, he doesn't seem to fit into that world very well.
Luke Wilson always plays Luke Wilson, though. I mean, he never really fits in perfectly anywhere, I find. Like,
he seems like he would be a better fit as like a band manager who was just like a pal of the band's who ended up their manager, and he kind of doesn't know how to do anything else, you know. But like the overall problem with this show, it is that Sorkin-y thing of like, let's elevate something to like godhood and talk about it in a way that people don't talk about it. Like the old roadie guy who like says, like, you know, when you're talking to me, you're talking to the history of rock and roll, or whatever bullshit line that was. And it's like, nobody would fucking say that. Least of all, this guy, like the guy who's all about like the business of rock, would just be like, I don't have time for your fucking bullshit. I've been doing this forever. Like, you don't have anything that you could tell me. Instead, they make the subtext the text, and it's like, and so you lose everybody, because it's like, no, who wants to listen to a guy who's telling you that he's the fucking history of rock and roll? Like, go fuck yourself. Like, you're not like, it's like when you walk into like a Hard Rock Cafe and they're like, this is the history of rock and roll. It's like, no, it's a place where I get jalapeno poppers. Like, this isn't fucking rock and roll, you know? It's just like, and also like, just there's just so many things that ring so false, like beginning with like the skateboarding. Backstage.
Thank
like,
you.
Are you fucking kidding me? Nobody would insure that group. At all, like, you know. And then to give Rafe Spall, to make him such a dummy about music that he mispronounces Pink Floyd
and thinks it's a
like,
guy.
Come on, right? Come on. Like, in this day and age, somebody doesn't know that Pink Floyd is a band. Also, go fuck yourself. Like, come on, Jesus.
Well, I mean, what I'm struck by is the. Like, who is this show exactly for? Like, what's the marketing plan? What's the demographic white space they're trying to fill here with this show? And it's really hard.
Well,
to...
Well, white is correct. Yeah. White is very correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
space.
But it is. It's so romanticized, and like, it just feels like it is sort of like, should be, it's like, you know, you're like, 5-10-year-old brother who won't sit through Ray Donovan with you. Maybe this show's the one where you, a 65-year-old man, and your 60-year-old brother can finally connect with. Roadies. Showtime. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, it's just doesn't really hit on all cylinders for any particular kind of, like, you know, TV watching demo that I would be, you know, could identify easy. The one thing that I kind of like, for me, for this show, let's rearrange it. Let's make it about the English guy coming in to, like, let's make it a fish out of water story. At least that has some anchor to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, the Aaron Sorkin analogy is so perfect, because this really is the Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip of arena rock.
Yeah.
Like, in every disappointing, gross, dumb way. I couldn't find hardly anything to latch onto. The only tiny things were, like, Rafe Spall has a couple of good reactions when he gets the text that was he was accidentally CC'd on. He holds it up and makes that face. Like, he's funny. He deserves a better show.
He is. Yeah.
For sure.
Or even just like when he like collapses and falls down. I was just like, man, he sold that. Like, that was good.
Yeah. But, oh, and I should give a shout out to my catfish friend, Machine Gun Kelly, who plays Imogen Poots's twin brother.
Wait, he was on Catfish?
Yeah, he was in one of the episodes that Max wasn't on last season.
Oh,
when he was making his
that's where I know him from.
Yes. He was from an infamous episode where it turned out the person who had written in was also faking, and she was like, had gotten these two lesbians that she knew to, I'm not going to get into it, but he was actually kind of likable on that show, despite in one scene wearing a tank top that was like literally down to his knees. So shout out Machine Gun Kelly. I'm glad you're having a career.
He was good in that movie Beyond the Lights too. I liked him in that.
He was good in that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So, Rhodey's no bueno.
Yeah, I don't feel a need to continue with this. Joe, you liked it the most of all of us, it sounds like. Are you going to keep watching?
I feel like just being okay is a, like I said it was just okay in the context of I hate the fact that I have to come up with an opinion on this show because I was just so like weary of it. I was just like, okay. Like I had also watched a lot of television before watching that because I saved it to watching it last night. And I was just like, there was too much. There was too much other stuff. I'd watched all of the game shows and then Game of Thrones.
Oh,
and
God.
I was just like, I just want to get to Silicon Valley. And yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, it's time to move on to Around the Dial. Tari, first up.
Just a brief mention of the Jim Gaffigan Show. It came back with two new episodes for its second season on Father's Day, so a week ago Sunday. Everyone knows who Jim Gaffigan is. He's so likable. This is like a slightly fictionalized version of his show. The woman who is his wife is named Jeannie, but it is not his actual wife, although she is right on the show. It's way funnier and weirder than it was in season one. It seems like a version of, it's like a Louis that's trying to make you laugh instead of bum you out or make you kill yourself. And the, especially in the first two episodes, there was a whole thing with, Jeannie, his wife, keeps wanting to make him friends with their priest, like sets them up for like social things. And he ends up going to like a Fallon taping with him and colds the whole audience and cools it, whatever. And then there's in the episode that just aired, the third episode, which is called Ugly, is about him auditioning for a role that is literally called Ugly and like how enthusiastic everyone is about, like, wow, he really is ugly. Like it's so dumb, but he sells it because he's hilarious. And I know we're going to get to Match Game in a second. And Alec Baldwin is also in that episode, as is John Mulaney, who I'm going to have to do a post on him in the coming weeks because he's also in the season premiere of Difficult People. This time he's playing in Jim Gaffigan's show. He played himself in the other one. He will not, but he's auditioning for the young JFK when Jim is coming into the casting office to audition for Ugly. They have a very funny moment. Anyway, it's like not reinventing the sitcom wheel. It's a very good sitcom adaptation of Jim Gaffigan's comedian persona. So if you like him, you'll probably like this. TV Land Sunday nights. And my plug, we're going to be off next week. We forgot to say that up top. The podcast is. But for the week of July 4th, we are having Must See TV Week on previously.tv. So come and see all of the Frenzy, Will and Gracie, Cheersy, ERE, all those great shows from when people used to watch NBC will be celebrated on previously.tv. And if you're not into the nostalgia thing, I also want to just shout out, we finished our coverage of Orange is the New Black season 4 last Friday. So please go to the site and check out all of our posts on the episode. I will link it in the show notes.
All right, Jeff, lead us on this next bit.
Well, you know, this season was touted, of Game of Thrones was touted as the best ever. And
by who?
By the producers.
Okay.
They were like, this is our best season yet.
Okay.
And I had my doubts. Because, you know, there was a lot of, like, track laying at the beginning, and there were a couple of episodes where I was like, what, you know, what's this about? But I have to say, the finale was one of the best episodes of that show ever. It was just outrageously amazing. So if I had to, like, if the rest of the season didn't exactly do it for me at all points, it was totally worth it to build up to this very, very satisfying climactic episode. It was their best sort of season ender, I think, of the entire series.
Well, traditionally, the Game of Thrones season ender was sort of like a denouement after the last, the second, you know, the penultimate episode. That's usually where the big stuff
happens. Soprano style. Yeah.
Not that the the last week's episode was pretty big with the the big battle and all that stuff going on with Jon Snow kind of being stupid. That was, you know, given the events of last week, when everybody this week sort of did the rally around the King of the North spiel, somebody's like, yeah, but you remember last week when he had that big battle, he was just like really pigheaded and almost died, and it was his sister that saved him. Maybe we should make the sister the ruler.
Remember how he didn't really have a plan and we want him to like be a commander now? Like, he kind of didn't have a plan, right? Well, never mind. King of the North.
But you're right. The finale was very satisfying, a surprising number of resolutions for a show like this. And perhaps more importantly, the promise of people actually getting together on one landmass after a billion years. Like, Dragon Lady finally gets back into the story. With her Tyrion, who's been totally wasted this season. His element for that character. And it feels like they were just sort of spinning his wheels. But how about that green fire? That was exciting.
Oh my God.
Even though it looked totally bad. The special effects in that scene were terrible, but it was still satisfying.
But to me, it's like, it's a way that the show has evolved from the beginning of the series, where it was very like male centric. And now it is completely like it's all of these different powerful females who are like really going to like make shit happen.
Except for the nun who's getting raped 24/7.
Except for what?
The nun who's getting raped 24/7.
Well, yeah. You can't make an omelet without
raping a few eggs. Yeah, that's Game of Thrones in a nutshell.
Oh my God.
Guys.
What? Well, it's what? There.
No. Look, that's a first. It's a first draft. That's a first draft metaphor. So,
what do you think, Joe?
Anyway,
I didn't like it.
Yeah,
what?
I did not care for it. I thought it was a lot of fan service. I thought it was a lot of really like easy, kind of out of nowhere stuff. The Arya thing had no build up to it. I thought it was so dumb. I thought even the thing with the stuff in King's Landing was cool, and yet like, where did all of these like little child operatives come from? Like, all of a sudden they're there and they're like perfectly placed and coordinated to carry out this whole plot that had no build up to it. I thought the thing with the nun was actually gross, because it was fan service in the guise of having this like mutant creature rape a nun, and then having her, like literally like recite a meme as she's walking away. I was just like, okay, you guys have been reading the Reddit boards. I thought it was the one thing I did like was the Jon and Sansa stuff, because like, you could see at the end when they're all doing the King of the North thing, that look she gives to Littlefinger, where it's just like, oh, she does not want him to be right, but I think she's starting to think in the back of her head like, oh, maybe I would be better at this, and maybe I do deserve to be in charge here at Winterfell. So I like that they're doing a slow burn on that. And if you see any of the like post-show interviews, like, they're totally setting that up, where they're talking about like, oh yeah, like, Sansa's not totally happy, and Jon maybe did not do right by her in that scene, and he's going to maybe regret it. So I thought that was cool. I thought the rest of it was, we need to send the fans home happy this season, and we're just going to like overload shit onto it. And I think I'm more tolerant of the show being a little bit more waiting to get there. I think that I at least need some sort of build up to what happens. I thought the thing with like Daenerys like sailing away at the end was super cool, and anything that Lady Olenna does is awesome. Like, even with that loser of a Dorne storyline, I feel like she could like rehab that. But it seemed like a lot of— Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's been a little strange this season, because you could tell the writers are writing a little looser and sort of going back on, some sort of tried and true, kind of jokey bits, like the it's just been lighter this season, not lighter, but you know what I mean? Like,
The thing with like the performers doing the like, the play of Game of Thrones, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah. And I feel like some of the stuff that you're complaining about might be because of the lack of like nitty-gritty detail to pull from and right. sort of give it that sort of full world nuance that, you know, was sort of missing maybe from this season. Like I definitely found to be true. Like it did seem much like more conventional.
Yeah, geography has gone totally out of the window, where like that was like the underrated sort of through line of the show. It was just like, yeah, it takes people forever and a day to get places because like that's the way the world is mapped out. And the producers, for sometimes good and sometimes bad, were just like, look, we're just not going to obey the laws of geography anymore. Like someone's just going to get there when we need them to get there. And that's all there is to it. And it's like it's definitely like the George R.R. Martin less approach, which again, for good and ill.
So just to be clear, you didn't get a little thrill when the whole church blew up?
Well, no, because Marjorie died and she's my favorite character. Okay. So no, I thought that was like, that was good and like good on Cersei for like figuring that out. And I thought that was cool. If the other things weren't nagging at me, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
All right.
All right. It's time for Joe. Joe.
Oh, Match Game was on last night. They did the ABC premiered their retro old school game show lineup last night. They did Celebrity Family Feud. They did the $100,000 pyramid with Michael Strahan, who wasn't great but didn't kill the show like I thought he was going to. I actually thought that was more enjoyable to watch than I was expecting. But the thing that I think everybody was looking forward to was Match Game, which isn't quite there, but it's closer than I thought it was going to be. And I thought Alec Baldwin did a pretty good job in the host role. I think if they can tinker the celebrity lineup a little bit better, they really might have something. I think Rosie O'Donnell's, weirdly enough, like a really good building block to build around.
Yes.
She somehow doesn't like steamroll everything like she did on Hollywood Game Night. Tara, you and I have talked about this at length.
Yes. She was she was perfect. She was totally the Brett Summers of our generation. And that's what you want her to be. I thought she was great.
I was mixed on J.B. Smoove because I feel like on the one hand, he was totally going rogue and not playing the game, which really irritates me. And yet that's one of those like Match Game ingredients that sometimes like the chaos made that game. So
which position was he in?
He was Dawson. In the Dawson. They didn't really like try and match that up so well.
Okay. Yeah.
But, whereas like I feel like Rosie's almost the Dawson because she's the one, she's like the reliable one.
She's the all-star.
The one that like, she'll win you the money.
Yeah.
Whereas like, he definitely won't. JB definitely won't. But then, Tara, I know you're going to want to talk about Deborah Messing because she does not know how to play Match Game, you guys. Like,
well, she doesn't
all.
Know how to there spell. Was there's also that, which is a problem.
Yeah. But like, when the thing is, I can't, the Rolling Stones, I can't get no blank. They don't want you to actually say the word of the thing.
They
like,
don't.
That's not the point of the game.
No.
It's weird. I had been watching a lot of old Match Game to sort of like get myself in the spirit for it. And it is the raggedness of it is baked into the concept of it. And like, even the questions back in the old days, like sometimes they're asking for a joke. Sometimes they're asking for just like the regular old, like logical thing. Mm-hmm. Like they want, you know, to say when they're leading you up to the doorstep of Hickey, they just want you to say Hickey. And like that totally fit the thing. And I thought it was enjoyable to watch as kind of, you know, as I said, ragged and janky as it was at times.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go out of my way to watch it again, but it's totally in the zone of like if you're in a hotel room and don't have a DVR.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, yay, Match Game is on. Like you would be happy to see it. I also was pleasantly surprised by how good Alec Baldwin
hotel
was.
Hotel TV, that's a high compliment.
It's totally a thing. And yeah, he was better than I expected for not being a comic, especially since I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched part of Michael Strahan on Pyramid and like, why did he get that job? Like he's not interesting. He's not funny.
No.
I mean, he's cute, I guess, but like he has not qualified to, I mean, he's not my jam either, but I'm just saying like, I don't know what else it would be. Like he's famous. Sure.
Right.
But like, he's not the right. There are so many million other people that would be better in that role and just give it to him.
I would actually swap out, having watched none of these, mm-hmm. I would actually swap out Strahan and JB Smoove, because JB Smoove like, probably is a host.
Well, the problem is that on Pyramid, you want someone who's going to be able to be like, oh, if you do that Dick Clark thing where it's like, oh, what if you had said blah, 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 which Strahan nor Smoove is qualified to do, in my opinion. And I thought it was that he was okay, I guess.
I have a question about these shows.
Yes.
I am in the Bunting camp of not having watched any of them. How do they, especially Match Game, how do they hold up as an hour-long enterprise?
Oh, they'd all be better as half hours. Well, the Pyramid was structured as essentially two half-hour episodes back up against each other. So
was Match Game, really. It's not like the person who won the first half hour came back for the second half hour. So either of those.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like maybe they left themselves an out to be able to knock this down to 2.5 hours if they need to.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
I imagine the consideration is getting the celebrities, and like you have to make it somewhat meaty and worth their time to make them do it. You know, like it's not like this is a celebrity name game or something. Like it's similar with Hollywood. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say I have a theory about to go back to Deborah Messing. I have a theory that it was very explicitly explained to her, but my take on her is that she won't really listen to anybody. And so she's like, I've got it. Yes, I understand. No, I've got it. You don't have to explain it to me. I'm very smart.
Well, she even did a thing at the beginning where like she forgot to hold her card up during the intros. And then at the end, she's just like, oh, I forgot to hold my card up. I'll do it now. And it's like... Mm-hmm. Deborah.
She's totally steering into the skid of everything I think about her, which I almost admire. Anyway, I did write a post about this, which you can see on previously.tv. I'll link it in the show notes. It's my imagined. So what happens in the game is when she wrote satisfaction on her card, she actually wrote satisfaction, I think. So my speculation was that she got out of this taping, immediately emailed her agent to try and ask him to figure out how they could fix it. Maybe they could edit around her. And so it's a email correspondence I made up between the two of them on previously.tv.
As all of these are, and this is now what, your fourth?
This is the fourth
time. Yeah, they're all so good, but the flawless moment that made me sort of sit back in my chair like, my wife is an artist, is when she not only failed to capitalize, but also misspelled Brandeis. Didn't do that, but you did. It was brilliant.
She really did go to Brandeis. I researched that for that stupid joke.
Wow.
And Joe, what do you have to pitch for us this week?
Oh, so once again, because it's this Thursday, Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. in Williamsburg at Videology Bar and Cinema, we're doing a movie spelling bee. If you are in the neighborhood, in the borough, in the whatever, want to stop by, it starts at 9:30. You can participate if you want, or just watch other people try and fail to spell very difficult to spell movie star, director, cinematographer, sometimes composer names. It should be a good time. It was a good time when we did it last time in January, so we're doing it again. Should have a bigger crowd this time, so I think it'll be fun. Come on out if you are around.
All right, Sarah, wrap it up.
Below Deck Mediterranean. That's right. The I would say redheaded stepchild, but actually it's like redheaded full-blooded child of Below Deck. It's almost as good and sort of trashily interesting as its predecessor, which basically is the lives and below deck loves of yachting crew. We are getting to the point in the season now where people are going to lose their mofo and minds. There's going to be like drinking and barfing. There's going to be intercast hookups. Someone's going to get fired. Now is the time to drop in. Like, if you really feel like you have to know all the backstory, you can read my write-ups on previously.tv. But this is kind of the same thing every season of this franchise, that like you get to episode 8 or 9 and then finally all the, you know, we get to the fireworks factory and they all go off at once at sea while soaked in vodka. So it's going to be good. I recommend that you get on board because I enjoy talking about it with people. The only thing that I wish is that they would pull Captain Lee Ross back off of Famous Original Flavor and put him on this boat, because Captain Mark is fine. but he's not as disgustedly like most interesting man in the world captains a boat as Captain Lee is, and that would be much more awesome in my opinion. My plug, speaking of The Shallows, The Order of the Shallows will be back, ranking your Wimbledon round of 16. Weather permitting, that should be in about a week and a half. So Joe Reed, frequent guest of the show, John Ramos, No Middle Ground's own Paul Quinn, and a cast of other Shallowsians will be ranking all the tennis players in the British Open, they're still holding that. What is even going on, like, Brexit wise, like maybe they're just going to hold it like on an aircraft carrier. I don't know. You will be able to find that at tomatonation.com along with some other writings of mine all the time.
You know those World War II tiny little islands with the huts on them, the sea land? That's where it's going to be. Everybody, it is time for the canon. This week we have a submission from listener Laura. Take it away, Laura.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. This is Laura from Minnesota, and I'm submitting Parenthood, Season 2, Episode 15, titled Just Go Home, for the canon. The main plot of this episode revolves around 15-year-old Drew reconnecting with his estranged father, Seth, who's an ex-drug addict and a musician, played by John Corbett. Drew is clearly charmed by his father and is interested in getting to know him better, but when he tells his older sister Amber that they've had lunch, Amber reminds him that he was too young to remember the bad times that Seth put them through. Upon hearing Amber and Drew arguing, their mother, Sarah, played by Lauren Graham, enters and realizes that her volatile ex-husband has been spending time with her son without her knowledge. This news causes Sarah to break down.
Do you have something that you need to say?
Amber... You know what? Fine. Yeah, Mom. Dad's in town, okay? And I saw him, and I want to see him again.
What do you mean you saw him?
I saw him.
You saw him, and you didn't tell me?
No, I didn't tell you.
Why not? Why didn't he call me?
Why are you so opposed to me having
a
relationship with him?
This kind of sneaking around is very
familiar
to me.
Why does he have to call you?
It's very familiar to me.
He's an adult.
He
doesn't have to call
me because I have to see what condition he's in before I allow him to see you.
Do you not trust me?
You don't understand. You don't remember, okay? Do you want to go back to the three of us living in a motel? I don't.
No,
Mom. You won't see him again until I talk to him.
He's changed. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
I am going to talk to him before you see him again. That's it. My God, Seth is in town.
Graham's performance in this scene is one of the best things about this episode. She nails the very particular kind of anger that comes with trying to protect someone that you love. Later, Sarah softens and encourages both Drew and Amber to attend their father's concert. While Drew is enthusiastic, Amber is skeptical but attends to support her brother. At the concert, she makes fun of how John Corbett looks in a leather vest, which is really dumb. Perhaps the best scene of the episode happens when Drew and Amber return from the concert. After they've gone to bed, Sarah leans over her father's shoulder, and without saying anything, she expresses relief to have her kids home, safe, and away from Seth, and at the same time, wistfulness for the life that she'll never be able to have with him as husband and wife. Plus, Sarah's father is played by Craig T. Nelson, and who wouldn't want to be comforted by him? Like all the best Parenthood episodes, this story doesn't reinvent the wheel. There have been plenty of family dramas to address absentee dads, but Parenthood elevates these tropes with genuine, affecting performances from almost all members of their large ensemble cast. Handheld camera work adds to the naturalistic feel of the show, just like it did on executive producer Jason Katmus's last series, Friday Night Lights. Parenthood has earned something of a reputation as a show that aims to make the viewer cry in every episode, and this is true, but for the most part, the show earns its tears by drawing a set of complex characters and dialing directly into their emotions, forcing the audience to relate, rather than just relying on plot twists or major tragedies to drive emotion. Thanks for considering Parenthood's Just Go Home for submission into the Extra Hot Great canon. I love the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura. I wanted to talk about the other storylines a little bit that she didn't bring up because that's not the only thing that happens. There is more to the episode than that. what's also going on at this stage in season two is Hattie has just left her parents' house, Christina and Adam, the Monica Potter and Peter Krause characters, because she's been sneaking around with this guy that she's been seeing and they were mad. So she stomped over to her grandparents' place. And so Hattie is kind of, I'm just going to say, a shithead through the entire series. She's a real brat. She's very spoiled. And she, however, sort of can appreciate this speech that she gets from her grandmother.
Do you want to know what I think? It's okay if you don't. I think you should go home.
I don't think that that's going to fix anything.
Well, that's not why you go home. You go because they love you. You know? You just go back. I mean, everything doesn't have to be solved. It doesn't work that way, you know? It's not math. You just go home.
It's such a nice speech. Camila's right. But also what happens is she just goes home and her parents are like, great, you're home. I mean, they have like a conversation about why she left, but they don't yell at her at all. It's so infuriating to me. Like, she gets away with everything on the show. Fucking Hattie. not to mention that her boyfriend that they don't approve of, but then they come around on because they realize he's better than their own stupid child, is Alex, played by Michael B. Jordan. Like, this perfect unicorn of a teen boyfriend no one ever had.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Anyway, the other storyline is Crosby and Jasmine are getting ready to get married, and so they have this big fight after their engaged encounter at the church in clip four.
I can't marry someone who will not let me make any decisions, okay? I'm starting to realize that you are very controlling. I mean, how we load the dishwasher, or how we unload groceries, or the toilet paper's got to be up instead of under because you like up, or the fact that there's no whole milk in the fridge, which is what I like. The wedding... I'm getting completely lost here. My ideas don't even exist.
Okay. Well, thanks for telling me all that.
You're welcome.
I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to say.
Look, I did not mean it to come out like that, but...
You want this back?
No, I don't want the ring back.
And what the hell does I can't marry a woman who won't let me make decisions mean? What's my takeaway from that?
I was upset, all right? I'm trying to be honest with you. I can't hold it any longer.
You don't want to load the dishwasher?
It's not about the dishwasher.
What is it?
It's that you don't let me make any decisions.
I don't let you, or you just don't do it.
You don't let me.
You know what? If I didn't take the lead on things, nothing would get done.
Oh,
ever.
Really?
So you can call it whatever you want. Call it being controlling, whatever. It's called being responsible.
Yeah.
Something you never knew.
Because you found me in a ditch. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't show up to work or brush my teeth. Are you crazy? You couldn't compromise to save your life.
I compromise every day.
Really? When? You don't compromise. When were you going to tell me about having three more kids?
That was a workbook exercise. And, you know, I'm sorry that my vision for our family is so terrible.
I'm just
going to
drop those three kids on my lap like you did Jabbar?
Wow.
I don't mean that.
Yeah, you know what? I'm hearing a lot of things you don't mean tonight. Like, you can't marry me. I don't compromise. I guess I should relax and enjoy your amazing stick figure plan for our family, huh? Should I do that?
You are so ungrateful, it's ridiculous.
Ungrateful?
Yeah, don't act
How
like...
How dare you?
Don't act like you call me ungrateful!
Yeah, you gave your amazing single life for us. You want to have it all. You want me to plan everything, and then you want to blame me for it.
I can't talk to you.
Then don't.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
I got a point. the dishwasher, you know, the way you load the dishwasher is pretty important.
Right. I agree.
Because it's not only how you load it, but it's also the ease in which after it's done, you can quickly unload it based on
the
strategy of loading
it. I agree.
Absolutely.
So
wait to correct it until the idiot who did it wrong is out of the room. That's marriage 101. Come on.
All right. Well, I'm glad we all agree.
You're quiet. Sorry.
Have
you all have
out of care.
Dishwashers. Like,
I actually don't.
Okay. You quietly reorganize it.
Because I'm an asshole.
You quietly reorganize it and then make sure you're the one who unloads it and nobody is the wiser.
Yes, passive aggression, the way of the
Absolutely.
Word,
Yeah, Crosby, I mean, Jasmine got a lot of shit over the years, too, from fans of the show. But in this case, she's not wrong. Crosby is completely shiftless. And this fight was a long time coming, but not for the reasons that he thinks. And so that was also well handled in this episode, I thought. But in general, I don't know if the Sarah, Seth, Amber, Drew stuff is enough for me to want to put it over the top into the canon. I feel like they had bigger turning points than this. And although she's right, Lauren Graham's performance, both in the scene where she screams at the kids and then later when she goes to Seth's motel room to check on him and make sure he's not super high. She does really nice work in this role. She has a lot of thankless stuff to do. And Lauren Graham is, like, I think, doesn't get enough credit for how unvain she's willing to be in this part, because Sarah does not have her shit together at all. And she spends a lot of time, like, mad and sort of spinning and stuff. And she Lauren Graham commits to the performance in a way that I think was underappreciated. But other than that, I don't know that there's enough here in this episode for me to want to induct it to the canon. So I'm curious to know what other people think, starting with Sarah, who did a rewatch on Parenthood or a marathon diary for a while, sort of been in suspended animation. Sarah, take it away.
This is where I left off, which is weird.
That's so funny.
I liked this episode, but I was sort of looking at it because this is where I left off. And it did make me want to watch more episodes after this. And as Tara can attest, when I was watching, like, episode 217 the other day, and texted her a picture of this completely disgusting, unacceptable, un-American hat on John Corbett, who plays Seth. But then it was like, he is cast perfectly. He is written perfectly. Their responses to him are perfect. Like, he is absolutely that, like, sort of outer borough try-hard band guy. But on the other hand, he's not. Like, there is nuance to him, and you absolutely understand why everyone is behaving the way they are in that moment. So I think that this episode might get into the canon for me just because I feel like it's typical of a Parenthood episode. Like, not that it's necessarily the best of them, but that you do have these moments for the characters that are they're very, like, focal or seminal. And that there is sort of a lot of, like, actual yelling where you're like, this is a fight that a lot of people have, and it's hard to be for or against anyone. I did always have issues with how Jasmine was written, because she was written like a real shit. Like, her handling of the Jabbar thing, like, she outright lied about it to a lot of people. 4 years, like, for the kid's entire life. And then that's never really dealt with. And it felt like the writers wanted us to hate her for reasons that I didn't understand. Like, just write her differently then.
Even just, like, changing the wedding date. I was just like, that's sort of brushed off, but it's like, yeah, that's kind of a, like, sociopath of a move where it's just sort of like, you change the wedding date and you're just like, oh, no big. Did I mention this? I guess not. Like, what?
And to just always have your mother over and, like, allowing her to interfere. Like, I get it. And yet I don't get it. Like,
yeah.
I think sometimes TV characters are written as much more tone deaf about this stuff than actual people are.
Yeah.
But yeah, the show is really well acted. And then now and then they have a, like, speech that's like, it shouldn't work. Like, Camille's little thing about, you know, you just go home. Like, it isn't going to fix anything, because life isn't like that. It's not math. That it should sound really sort of stagey and writerly, but it works. Like, they have good actors, and it, you know, these things that they say feel really, they feel felt and not too TV. But I take Tara's point, actually, because I'm not sure that this is the best episode or the best episode even in season two, but I think it's very typical of the show. That said, with Laura's pitch centering around the Seth storyline, I'm not sure this episode is even, like, the linchpin of that. So I don't know. It's a puzzler. Joe, what do you think?
So in this episode's favor, for one thing, not a lot of Julia and Joel and their terrible daughter.
Oh, her.
Right? Oh, she didn't get really bad until as the series went on, but still. Love
no,
that
she did. It's like in the next episode.
Yes.
I'm a vegetarian.
Worst child. I wrote a thing. I wrote an article when I was at The Wire about that, about like the worst child characters on television. She was like number one with a bullet. The scene with Camille and Patty, I thought, was a very good scene. The scene with Sarah and the kids is an even better scene. I mean, Tara like explained exactly why. I thought that was one scene. There are times in the show where Sarah and Lorelai Gilmore start to converge just because there's so much of like Lauren Graham, I think, in both of those characters in terms of like her personality. But this was a scene where she like really differentiates, and this show did arguing better than any show on television, I feel like, at the time. They really did a lot with that kind of overlapping dialogue where they're like, you might only get like 3/4 of this and that's fine. I liked that. I immediately gravitate to any episode where Amber and Drew are foregrounded. I know I followed this series with rapt attention, waiting for the ultimate Drew coming out storyline that never came. That never came, and I was so...
Because that actor cannot handle it, because he's not good.
I guess. I just thought that character had a real, like, sweetness to him that I really appreciated, and I was sort of waiting for them to capitalize on that, and they never really did, which is, I guess, fine, but, like, I really was hanging on a thread on that one. And I think, I mean... Nae Whitman's phenomenal, and she's not really the focal point of this episode. There are better episodes where she is the focal point. I think she's phenomenal. On the downside, I get what you're saying, Sarah, about John Corbett and his character. There is something about him where I think it's the same thing with me and Harry Connick Jr., where I always find his characters slimy and smarmy and awful and jerky, and like this character really steers into that, but I can't then pull myself out of that to be like, oh, but like you gotta feel for the guy, because I don't have to feel for the guy because he's looking like that with that goatee and that sweaty faced awfulness and just
I will text you the picture of the hat. I get it.
Every role he plays, he's like that, including fucking Aiden on Sex and the City, who is a judgmental asshole. Also, and Tara, you mentioned this too, the Hattie Alex storyline never worked for me for a lot of the reasons why you said. It was too – they set him up as too unrealistically perfect and uncomplicated just so they could find a way for what's Peter Krause's character's name?
Adam.
Yeah, and for Adam to be more easily wrong about him. It was so simplistic and it was so – easy.
And it's Peter Krause. So we're always going to side against that guy. So relax.
Right. Exactly. And it's Michael B. Jordan, who is so naturally likable. Like, you don't have to try so hard to make it seem so cut and dried. Hattie was never my favorite character ever, except for when they brought her back at the end as a lesbian, even though she was dating Tavi Gevinson in her weird monotone. But like, I liked that storyline. I thought that was fine. I ultimately come out, I think I liked this episode, but I don't know if it's like I canon liked this episode. So I'll have to mull on it in the whatever few seconds I have while Jeff talks.
All right. Well, it's obvious that I have to be Jeff Drake rock cop on this episode. Because There's a big thing about this episode I cannot get over, and that is the age of the audience at the rock show.
Oh, that's a great point.
Because all of the guys on stage, like, I totally believe this, if this is like a bunch of 30 and 40 year old parents out watching their favorite fucking blues band play, but like that there's a bunch of like 20 year olds and younger and like watching John Corbett and his like sad rock band play. I honestly just kept like scanning the crowd. I was like, where's the mom jeans?
Yeah.
Where's the dad in his Tommy Bahamas shirt? Like that's the crowd for this band. Like they're terrible. Like they're terrible. Their website's terrible. Like he doesn't know about the internet. Like how are they connecting with younger fans? Okay. That said, this show is probably like the, in general, is probably the best show on TV that I only watch like select episodes of. Every time I watch it, I'm like, this is a great show. And I don't know why I don't watch it. And I think part of it is like when it gets into the specifics, like the arguing, like somebody said earlier, like this show does, I think Joe, it was you, like that this show does arguments better than any other show. Like that scene where Lauren Graham comes in and the kids are having the argument, and that whole scene is amazing. It's so good. And because it's so specific, but when they go to generalizations, then it feels kind of hacky, like near the end when Peter Krause is making the pancakes. It's just like, it just feels like, or even when they're making the ice cream at the beginning. I guess that's how you show you're being a family, is you make food together. You know, it's just like, so like, they're just like these moments that just kind of, for every moment that like really like elevates this show into like, wow, this is something special. There's also those moments that like, oh, this is kind of normal. Thank God there was very little Erica Christensen in this episode, because I forgot how much I really don't like her. But like there's so much to recommend this, and so much to like so much great about this episode. Like, you know, look, I didn't cry, guys. I didn't cry at all during this episode. And I didn't cry, and that had nothing to do with the fact that I maybe had 2.5 hours of sleep last night. But
if anything, that would have made you cry more.
Well, who's to say? I already said I didn't cry, Joe. Okay. So it's obvious that I didn't. But yeah, I mean, like, is this like? Like it's a solid episode of the show. Like I can see why somebody would love this episode and want to submit it for the canon. But like, is it like, oh, like you absolutely have to see this episode of this show in order to like really like, if you've seen no episodes, here's the episode that'll get you to watch the whole show. I think if it maybe didn't have the John Corbett stuff in it, like yeah. I could be more on board with it. But, you know, even though that motivates some of like Lauren Graham's greatest moments in this episode, there is something that it's like, it's not to say it's not a great episode, because it is. It's like a really great episode of television. But I just don't, I'm kind of on the fence on the, I don't really know that I would say like, oh, this has to go in the canon.
In my defense for not getting your perfectly good joke, Jeff, it was mostly because this episode super didn't make me cry, and it's so unusual for a Parenthood episode to not do that I thought that was maybe what you were getting at, that like, how dare a Parenthood episode not make me cry?
No, well, I'll tell you what, as a parent on this podcast, sure. Parenthood is a dangerous show to watch.
I can imagine.
Because it really like –
when you least expect it.
Yeah, because it has like sneaky moments where it's like, oh my God, somebody just punched me in the heart. You know, it's really good at it. It's really like really
you gotta get that looked
solid.
At, Jeff. Don't let people punch you in the heart. That's not good.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I was taught growing up that was what love was. but anyway, so it's like, I mean, it's a turn. Great it's a great show, but you know, and there are plenty of moments in this that are definitely like sort of, you know, really super emotional. Like that argument, I think is just like, I feel like that argument goes in the canon.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like that argument and her scene with John Corbett, if you kind of edit it a little bit more to see less of him.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he is – is he fresh from the shower or is he just sweaty?
You could be both.
We even have to ask.
You're in a hotel room, motel room without air conditioning and somewhere hot. You can be both. So this show, wow, this episode is just trope after trope after trope. Some dealt with more successfully than others. The mother-in-law who controls everything and including her daughter bit could have been pulled from a 70s sitcom, I feel. It felt really hokey to me. This episode to me seemed like a better built Hallmark movie. You know, it just felt like that kind of show, especially the end where the whole family goes to play basketball to make amends to everybody involved.
And the closing montage, which is literally every episode, I seem to recall clocking it for that. And then there's always some Dylanoid, ovary singing about something.
Lauren Graham is the highlight for me for this episode. The moment where she realizes that her husband assumed that she knew about her son coming to visit, and sort of kind of like, you know, puts her on her heels in that conversation, and sort of changes the tone of that, was great. I thought that was a great piece. But otherwise, this show, this episode, just seemed like a better build Hallmark movie to me and wasn't great. So anyways, so I'm going to vote no. So there's my vote, Tara.
I'm going to vote no too, but thank you for the submission.
Sarah?
It was a pleasure to watch, and I kept watching episodes. So for that reason, I'm going to vote yes. I think it was compelling enough to get into the canon.
Joe Reed?
Apparently.
Yeah, good, but not great. So I'm going to say no.
And Jeff Drake?
I'm going to say no, and how dare you submit this? No. thanks for the submission.
All right, that means four no's, one yes. I'm sorry to tell you, but Parenthood Season 2, Episode 15, Just Go Home, is not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
It is time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Sarah has her winner.
I do. It's Marta Kaufman of Great. Is it Grace and Frankie?
Yep.
It is.
And also Friends, who was, she gave an interview to Deadline.com, and we will link it in the show notes. And she was asked at the end about the possibility of a Friends reunion, and she gently but very firmly was like, that will never happen. It makes no sense. Like, she sort of implied a little bit that, like, contractually it would be such a headache that by the time they finally got everyone signed on, Matthew Perry probably would have actually turned into a leather Barca lounger instead of just looking like one. She didn't say that part. That was all me. Sorry. But I thought it was good that she's like, that's not something that should be. Like, Friends was what it was, and now it's over for all of us. So pleased to move on. So I thought that was good. I mean, maybe I wasn't a Friends watcher, so maybe people are really sad about that, but I thought it was good that she didn't leave it open to interpretation.
And Loser of the Week?
Well, I put it in the doc, but I feel that Jeff should talk about it more. Vinyl was unrenewed last week. HBO had actually picked it up shortly after it premiered earlier this year. And then last week was like, just kidding. So Jeff, you wrote about it for Previously.tv. Tell us more.
Well, I feel like this is the most fitting end to this show. That it would be like that instead of just like, like during the at the end of the first season, it didn't work out. We're not going to do another one. That early in the season, they're like, we're doing season two. And then there's all this talk about like showrunners changing and we're going to right the ship. And then it's like, you know what? Too much work. We decided that was a dumb idea. And so, like, I mean, that just never happened.
It's apparent to us that everyone hates Bobby Cannavale now.
Oh, my God. Is. Poor Bobby Cannavale, who deserves
fault.
So much better.
He does. If Rose Byrne likes him, he must better. Be okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, this is the fitting end for really one of television's worst shows and one of rock, certainly one of rock and roll's biggest crimes.
Wow.
Speaking of big crimes, you know what time it is?
Crime time?
Close. Game time.
Final.
All right, it is game time. This is the fifth of the season. Tara and Joe up top, tied with 2 points each. Sarah and value guests are on the bottom, pointless but hungry.
Yeah, pointless indeed.
Today we are playing Let's Go Grape Ape from Radish Cake, who earns himself an extra credit.
I think it's a herself.
That's what I said.
Oh, I thought you said himself. Sorry.
Herself. I went down on the mic. That's probably why I didn't hear.
All right.
Went down on the mic. That's
yeah. Oh, speaking of roadies.
All right. So she gets an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of her choosing. The game today is simple. I am going to read you a possible title of a TV show. You tell me if it is a Hanna-Barbera cartoon production or not.
Those are our choices, Hanna-Barbera or not. That's
yes.
it. All right.
We have 60 questions, so let's toss it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
Holy shit.
We will start with valued guests.
All right, so here's our order. Jeff, Tara,
yes.
Sarah, Joe. Are we ready to play Let's Go Grape Ape?
Okay, so yep. just you're going to give me a title.
True or false is your answer. That's all you get.
Okay, great. All right, yes.
All
sure.
right, going to start everybody off with some easy been. Ones. Jeff's first, Space Ghost.
That's an actual, that's a cartoon,
yeah,
right?
True or false? It's true. This true. Is a Hanna-Barbera show.
True, it is. Sorry.
All right.
Which is it? Yes it's or true. No? Okay.
True or false is your answer. Come on, guys.
Well, you played the sorry sound yeah. drop. I thought that might be a different thing for wrong. Okay, proceed.
Super Friends.
True.
Sarah, Pound Puppies.
Pound Puppies. False.
True.
Whoa.
Joe, Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Whether it's Hanna-Barbera or not. True?
All right, back to Jeff. Jeff, the Mork and Mindy Laverne and Shirley Fawns Hour.
I'm going to say true.
You are correct. Tara.
Nice.
Yes.
Clue Clubhouse.
False.
Correct. For Sarah, The Biscuits. B-I-S-K-I-T-T-S. The Biscuits.
True?
Correct.
Nice.
For Joe, The Dukes.
Oh, false.
Just give them a race to run. Oh. Generally, it's none of a gun. Ooh, ooh, we're going to have some fun.
Oh.
That wow. was worth it. That was worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Drake, the wow. Funky Phantom.
The Funky Phantom. Oh God, this is a real. That's a really good one. I'm gonna go true.
It is true. Correct.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
Richie Rich Goes to Hollywood.
True.
False. Sarah. The New Smurfs.
The New Smurfs. False.
You are correct. Yay. That is not a real show. All right, bring us into our first score break for Joe.
Yes.
The title is Benji, Zax, and the Alien Prince.
That's too weird to be made up. I'm going to say true.
You are correct. All right.
Very, very close game. Sarah and Joe and I are all tied with two apiece. Jeff Drake, our valued guest, has three.
All right.
Woo.
Back to the awesome. Game and back to Jeff. Laugh Olympics.
Oh, that's true.
It is. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch.
False.
No, sorry. It's true.
Oh.
No points. Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch, a real
yeah.
show. For Sarah. Captain Caveman and Son.
And Son?
Yep.
I mean, Captain Caveman may have inspired space somewhat, but and Son? Jesus, I'm way overthinking this. True.
Joe.
You really took us on a
yes.
journey, Sarah.
Yeah, that was something. That was a real Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style answer. Paul Bunyan and Babe.
Crap. Seems plausible. I'm going to say yes.
False.
Ah.
All right.
Too plausible.
Jeff Drake, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Yes.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Wait till your father gets home.
False.
Very true.
Oh,
Tara.
Damn it.
Yes.
Joke book. One word.
True.
Correct. Joke book was basically odds and ends and kind of an eternal clip show, basically.
Yeah. All right.
Sarah D. Bunting. Pink Panther and Sons. Pink Panther and Sons.
False.
True.
Yeah. Pink Panther got down, had some sons.
I'm going to say, only if they were adopted.
Oh. All right, back to Joe. The Godzilla Power Hour.
True.
You know that's true. Up from the depths, 30 stories true. High. For Jeff, Laverne yes. and Shirley in the Army.
True.
That is true. And
wow,
you may recall, here's a little quiz. First person answer gets 5 day points. Their sergeant was a...
robot.
Close.
Gorilla?
No. Pig.
Alien. Puppy?
Pig.
Pig.
Yep.
Jesus.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Birdman and the Galaxy Trio.
Oh, true.
True. That is from which Harvey Birdman comes from. Sarah D. Bunting. Scrappy-Doo in Outer Space.
True?
False. Rings no, true, it, though.
It feels
it's the fate that Scrappy-Doo deserved.
It feels
no.
so true. Oh.
All right, bring us into our second score break. It's Joe. Your title is Swatch Force.
Swatch Force?
Swatch Force. Huh.
That sounds just crassly commercial enough to be true. Right. I'm going to say yes, true.
Oh, God.
Damn it.
Whoever made up that one is an evil genius.
Me, I made up that one. All right, so let's hear them.
You're brilliant. Scores. Okay, Sarah and Joe are still tied with 3 each. I now have 4. Jeff is still in the lead with 5.
All right.
Very, very close.
Speaking of Jeff,
hooray.
Your yes. next possible title is Korg 70,000 BC.
True.
That is true. Live action Hanna-Barbera following a cave person family.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Named after a keyboard. Named
I was going to say.
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Partridge Family, 2200 AD.
Yeah, true.
That is true. Sarah, Goober and the Ghost Chasers.
Isn't that what last night's intervention was about, Sarah?
Uh-huh. False.
True.
Oh. Oh,
hey,
Sarah.
Speaking boy, of ghost boy. Chasers, Joe, Pac-Man.
True.
Correct. Jeff, Ms. Pac-Man.
Yes. True.
No, she was just on Pac-Man. She doesn't deserve her own show. She's
Thanks,
a lady.
Patriarchy.
Yep. Tara Ariano.
Yeah.
The Gary Coleman Show.
Oh, boy. True.
True.
Wow.
He played an angel sent
course,
to Earth.
Of course.
And stuff. Yep. Yeah. All right. For Sarah.
Stuff.
Yep.
Stuff.
Stuff. The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That sounds sensitive.
The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan.
I can't answer based on what I want to be true, so I'm going to say that it did exist, and that is true.
It is true. It's Jackie Chan and his like 25 kids solving crimes.
I have very big issues with the use of the word clan.
Yeah.
I just have to say.
All right, to Joe. The new Shmoo.
This, again, sounds too weird to be made up, so I'm going to say true.
Correct.
Absolutely.
For Jeff, the Quickie Koala Show.
Say that again.
The Quickie Koala Show.
Don't.
Is Quickie spelled with a K?
You know it.
False.
Oh, true. That's from the 80s.
Damn it.
Huh.
Tara.
Yeah.
C-Lab 2020 in space.
True.
False.
Oh.
In space. Not in space.
Wait, how could it be a sea lab in space?
Exactly.
Sarah, the 13 ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Oh, for God's sake. Go away, dudes. False.
True.
Wow.
Joe, taking us to our fourth score break. Your title, wait, fourth, third score break is Jabberjaw.
True.
Relatively well-known one. Yeah.
Oh, big changes in this round, guys. Sarah has 4, and now Jeff and Joe and I are all tied with 6 each.
Ooh, all right. So, Jeff, here's your question.
Damn.
Ready for your title? Rubik the Amazing Cube.
It's true.
It is true.
That's insane. True.
Oh, my God.
Tara.
Yeah.
Where's Huddles?
Huddles?
Huddles.
Cuddles.
Huddles.
Space? Huddles, like in a football game.
H-U-D-D-L-E-S. Like Huddles.
Like a space telescope.
Like a terrified animal.
Not Hubbles.
Okay.
Huddles.
Where's Goebbels?
That's
got
the
it.
Job, Dave.
Huddles.
It's Huddles.
Where's Bubbles?
Okay, everybody listening to the podcast, I am saying Huddles. It's Huddles, not Cuddles. Thank you.
Oh my God.
Where's Puddles is what you're saying. It's Puddles.
True.
Correct. Sarah Bunting, the Snorks.
Oh, the Snorks, true.
Correct. For Joe, Shirt Tails.
Oh, that was true.
That was true. Seemed like a mystery answer to the Care Bears about that time.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's right.
Jeff Drake, Inch High Private Eye.
Oh, 100% true.
Tara Ariano.
Right, OJ. Yes.
What happened to Huddles?
Oh! Oh, my God. It's the Captain Caveman and son of Goebbels. I'm going to say false.
You are correct.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting. Monchichis.
Monchichis?
Yep.
I think it was pronounced Monchichis.
Monchichis.
Often cuddly or huddly. True?
It's Monchichis. Yeah. Girl doll, boy doll. School time and football fan outfits are each sold separately.
Monchichi, Monchichi. Oh, so soft and cuddly. With the thumb in her mouth, she's really neat. Fun to wiggle her little feet.
Stop. Monchichi girl doll and boy doll are each sold separately from Mattel.
I apologize for correcting your pronunciation.
Not comfortable with any
also,
of that.
Also, don't correct my pronunciation because then you know it's real.
Well, that just means that the toy was real. That doesn't necessarily mean there was a
but she didn't
show.
Know that. All right, so that was a Japanese toy that became a TV show. All right, to Joe. Dino Mutt's All-Star Laugh Olympics.
Oh. This seems plausibly true. True.
Oh.
Jeff Drake, Top Cat.
Yes. True.
Tara Ariano.
Mm-hmm.
Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space.
Oh. False.
True.
Damn it.
No! Oh.
Sarah.
Space is your Achilles.
Yep. Astro and the Space Mutts.
Astro and the Space Mutts.
Yep.
False.
True.
Jesus.
Joe Reed, Fred and Barney meet Godzilla.
Oh God. I feel like this is maybe a bridge too far. I'm gonna say false.
You are correct.
Nice.
All right.
Okay, good. Thank God.
That was question 48 of 60.
Oh, boy.
Let's hear the scores.
Okay. Sarah's got 6. Joe and I are tied with 8 each. Jeff leads us all with 9.
All right. Everybody's got 3 questions left. 3. Yeah. That makes
all
sense.
Right.
All right. For Jeff, Meowser and Bowser, cat detectives.
First of all, Bowser
false.
Is a dog name, obviously.
You are correct. That is false. Tara.
Yeah.
Challenge of the Super Friends.
True. That's you.
Correct. Sarah. Help! It's the Hair Bear Bunch.
That's so disgusting.
Oh my God.
Just the title is like a misdemeanor sex crime.
But let me, before you answer, let me give you like the full title with all the punctuation. Oh, help! Exclamation point! Ellipses! It's the Hair Bear Bunch! Exclamation point!
Well, comma, my answer is colon true.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Watched it.
Joe.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, God.
Fonz and the gang meet the Globetrotters.
Oh, that sounds so true.
False. Ah, there was true. A Globetrotter show. It was a Fonz and the gang show, but never did they meet on their own show.
God. Okay.
Jeff Drake.
Yes.
The Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt.
Oh, God. This is insidious. Because it's either a real mashup or a fake one, isn't it? That, I guess that's the game, is what I just said.
Jeff just invented a game, everybody.
C-Lab in space, Jeff.
Yeah.
C-Lab in space!
Yeah, I'm going to say true.
Correct.
Nice Sarah. Job.
Hong Kong Fooey, Fhooey.
True.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kung Fu superstar, I believe. Sarah D. Bunting, the Pussycats on tour.
False.
Correct.
Hey.
Nice.
Joe, Woofer yes. and Whimper dog detectives.
Oh, no.
It's a good whimper
false.
Impression.
Canine detective.
True. That just proves that dogs are better detectives than cats. They were yep. the logical choice in the financially sound choice to make a TV show about cartoon dog detectives. Okay, one question for everybody left, so let's get the score star.
Okay, Sarah and Joe each have 8. I have 10. Jeff has 11.
Okay, so there's Ooh. Still a possibility for a tie here. Joe can clinch it. With this.
Jeff can,
Joe can do nothing of the sort.
I mean, Jeff can. Sorry. My apologies. Jeff, are you
yes.
ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Challenge of the GoBots.
Ooh. False.
You are
Yay!
Correct.
Wow.
Yay! All right, Tara.
Yeah.
The Completely Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley.
Oh, that's very true, and I watched it.
That is true. Sarah. This is my favorite one. The B.B. King Show.
Not even B.B. King and Lucille?
Nope. Not even in space.
No, but you know Lucille got a credit on that opening credits.
I hope
like,
so.
And featuring Lucille.
And Lucille is actually a pig. that's got to be true.
No, it doesn't.
Well played.
You bastard.
All right, last question for Joe. Uh-huh. Moby Dick and the Mighty Mitor. Mighty Mitor.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, that's why true. Not? Yeah. All right, let's just get the official end of game scores, please.
Amazing. Great game, everybody. Sarah had 8, Joe had 9, I had 11. Jeff Drake, our victor, 12 points.
All right. Yay! Well, participant giggles, I do have the tiebreaker. First person to shout out true or false will get 3 Dave points. Here we go. Super Friends, the legendary superpower show.
True.
It is 3 points Yay! For value guess on the Dave ledger.
Valued guest.
Way to go, Jeff. Congratulations. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We assembled our audio gear for a jam on the series premiere of Roadies before going around the dial with stops at The Jim Gaffigan Show, Game of Thrones, Match Game, and Below Deck. Laura unsuccessfully pitched us Parenthood's Just Go Home for the Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Jeff was the winner of the Let's Go Grape Ape game time from Radish Cake. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
fucking C-Lab in space,
Sarah D. Bunting.
I am very controlling.
Joe Reed.
I'll blank you next week.
And Jeff Drake.
I'm the history of rock and roll.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Crate.
And there'll be more from the Ponderosa Ranch in Bonanza on Wednesday morning at 11:15. In 25 minutes here on BBC One, the midday news. But now, wait till your father gets home.
I love my mom and dad and my brother too.
Gross.
And the groovy way we get along.
Every time the slightest little thing goes wrong, mom starts to sing this familiar song.
Wait till your father gets, until your father gets, wait till your father gets home.
Dad's not so bad and he seldom gets mad.
And we aren't about to be...
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.